Okay, so for today's readings, I thought I would say look at Yoniso Manisikara and kind of how that ties into, say, Dhamma Vichaya, sort of the second factor of sort of investigation of Dhammas. And first, I thought I would read just a little bit from Wings to Awakening. And before I do the, I'm going to just read like a paragraph of what Ajahn Jeff says about Yoniso Manisikara. In order to do that, I have to go back first and explain one of the terms he uses, which is phenomenology. So I thought I'd just give a little bit of, if I just sort of just threw that word out, it might be, it was confusing to me anyway, so. But I like the way he describes both of these. To avoid the drawbacks of the narrative and cosmological mindsets, the Buddha pursues an entirely different track, what he called entry into emptiness, and what modern philosophy calls radical phenomenology, a focus on the events of present consciousness in and of themselves, without reference to questions of whether there are any entities underlying those events. In the Buddha's case, he focused simply on the process of karmic cause and result as it played itself out in the immediate present. In the process of developing the skillfulness of mind, without reference to who or what lay behind those processes, on the most basic level of this mode of awareness, there was no sense of even of existence or non-existence, but simply the events of stress, its origin, its cessation, and the path to its cessation, arising and passing away. So it's I also looked up in the English Oxford Dictionary the phenomenology, and it says, the science of phenomenon as distinct from being. Ontology. So then I looked up the word ontology and it says specifications of conceptualization. So I think Ajahn Jeff did a better translation than that. I think this is what we're trying to get away from, this proliferation of minds. Okay, so then just one paragraph here from Ajahn Jeff's Wings to Awakening, page 155. The term appropriate attention, Yoniso Manisikara, can also be rendered as wise reflection, the proper approach, or systematic attention. It is essentially the basic insight that enables one to see which issues are worth paying attention to and which ones should be ignored. The meditator ignores questions that lead to the proliferation of mental effluence and pays attention to questions that help awaken them. As we noted earlier, the knowledge that puts an end to the effluence deals with experiences in the phenomenological mode in the present. Thus, the best question for awakening the effluence are ones that lead the mind into that mode. Now, this next sentence is interesting because it explains why Ajahn Pasanu doesn't answer a lot of our questions at midnight tea. Now, not all questions are helpful in this way. Some deal in terms of the focus of the mind on a narrative or on cosmological issues in ways that actually obstruct the phenomenological viewpoint. Okay. And then that I'd also read just the definitions of a couple of the terms that are going to come up from Jnanatiloka's Buddhist Dictionary. And then what he says on Manisikara. In a more general sense, the term applies frequently in the suttas as Yoniso Manisikara, wise or reasoned methodical attention or wise reflection. It is said in Majjhima Nikaya number 2, to counteract the cankers, asavas, it is a condition for the arising of right, okay, to so yonisomanasikara is used to counteract the cankers, the asavas. It is a condition for the arising of right view, the arising of stream entry, for the factors of enlightenment. Unwise attention, a yonisomanasikara, leads to the arising of the cankers and to the five hindrances. And then with the asavas, just give a quick definition of that. Literally, influxes, cankers, taints, corruptions, intoxicants, and biases. There is a list of four in the Dīkha Nikāya 16. The cankers of sense desire, kamasava, of desiring eternal existence, bhava-asava, of wrong views, ditta-asava, and of ignorance, vijja-asava. A list of three, omitting the cankers of views, is possibly older and is more frequent in the suttas. And so yes, it's the same sense desire, existence, and what was the other one? Ignorance. Again, in Majjhima Nikaya 2, in other places, both the threefold and the fourfold division are mentioned. The fourfold division also occurs under the name of floods, oga, and yokes, yoga. Through the path of stream entry, the canker of views is destroyed. Through the path of non-returning, the cankers of sense desires. Through the path of arhantship, the cankers of existence and ignorance. Majjhima Nikaya 2 shows how to overcome the cankers, namely through insight, sense control, avoidance, wise use of requisites of life. Okay. So we'll go on to read Majjhima Nikaya 2, the taints. All the taints. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anattapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the restraining of all the taints. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, Venerable Sir, the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, I say that the destruction of the taints is for one who knows and sees, not for one who does not know and see. Who knows and sees what? Wise attention and unwise full attention. When one attends unwisely, unarisen taints arise and arisen taints increase. When one attends wisely, unarisen taints do not arise and the arisen taints are abandoned. Bhikkhus, there are taints that should be abandoned by seeing. There are taints that should be abandoned by restraining. Taints that should be abandoned by using. Taints that should be abandoned by enduring. There are taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. There are taints that should be avoided by removing. These are the taints that should be abandoned by developing. Taints to be abandoned by seeing. What taints, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by seeing? Here, bhikkhus, an untaught, ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskillful and undisciplined in their dhamma, does not understand things, does not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he attends to those things unfit for attention, and he does not attend to those things fit for attention. And then there's an interesting note here. The Majjhima Atikaka makes the important point that there is no fixed determination of things in themselves as to whether they are fit or unfit for attention. The distinction consists rather in the mode of attention. That mode of attention that is a causal basis for unwholesome states of mind should be avoided, while that mode of attention that is a basis for wholesome states should be developed. And that was interesting. What are the things unfit for attention that he attends to? They are the things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taint of sensual desire arises in him, and the arisen taint of sensual desire increases. The unarisen taint of being arises in him, and the arisen taint of being increases. The unarisen taint of ignorance arises in him, and the arisen taint of ignorance increases. These are the things unfit for attention that he attends to. And what are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taints of sensual desire do not arise in him, and the arisen taints of sensual desire is abandoned. The unarisen taint of being does not arise in him, and the arisen taint of being is abandoned. The unarisen taint of ignorance does not arise in him, and the arisen taint of ignorance is abandoned. These are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to. By attending to things unfit for attention and not for attending to things fit for attention, both unarisen taints arise in him and arisen taints increase. This is how he attends unwisely. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what? What did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? Or else he is inwardly perplexed about the present thus. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? Then he attends unwisely in this way. One of six views arise in him. The view, self exists for me, arises in him as true and established, or the view, no self exists for me, arises in him true and established, or the view, I perceive self with self, or the view, I perceive not self with self, or the view, I perceive self with not self, or view arises in him true and established, or else he has some such view as this. It is this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the results of good and bad actions. But the self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. This speculative view, bhikkhus, is called the thicket of views, the wilderness of views, the contortion of views, the vacillation of views, the fetter of views. Fettered by the fetter of views, the untaught ordinary person is not freed from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. He is not freed from suffering, I say. Bhikkhus, a well-taught noble disciple, who has regards for the noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, understands that things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. And it goes through the opposite of what we just read earlier. What are the things unfit for attention that he does not attend to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taints of sensual desire arise in him. And again, from the previous page. These are the things fit for attention that he attends to. By not attending to things unfit for attention, and by attending to things fit for attention, unarisen taints do not arise in him, and arisen taints are abandoned. He attends wisely. This is suffering. He attends wisely. This is the origin of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the cessation of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. When he understands wisely, in this way, three fetters are abandoned in him: personality view, doubt, and adherence to rules and observances. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by seeing. There's an interesting footnote here for the next section. It says, if abandonment of the taints is understood in the strict sense of their ultimate destruction, then only two of the seven modes mentioned in the sutta affect their abandonment: the seeing, which we just read, and the development, which is the last one. The other five methods cannot directly accomplish the destruction of the taints, but they can keep them under control during the preparatory stages of practice and thereby facilitate their eventual eradication by the supramundane path. So the next five fall into this category. Taints to be abandoned by restraining. What taints, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by restraining? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, abides with the eye faculty restrained. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who abides with the eye faculty unrestrained, there is no vexation or fever in one who abides with the eye faculty restrained. Reflecting wisely, he abides with the ear faculty restrained, with the nose faculty restrained, with the tongue faculty restrained, with the body faculty restrained, with the mind faculty restrained. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who abides with the faculties unrestrained, there is no taint, vexation, or fever in one who abides with the faculties restrained. This is called the taints that should be abandoned by restraining. Taints to be abandoned by using. What bhikkhus should be abandoned by using? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, uses the robe only for protection from the cold, for protection of heat, from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, winds, sun, and creeping things, only for the purpose of modesty. Reflecting wisely, he uses alms food neither for amusement nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuance of the body, for ending discomfort, and for assisting the holy life. Considering, thus I shall terminate old feelings without arousing new feelings, and I shall be healthy and blameless and live in comfort. Reflecting wisely, he uses the resting place only for protection from cold, from protection of heat, from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and creeping things, only for the purpose of warding off the perils of climate, and for enjoying retreat. Reflecting wisely, he uses medicinal requisites only for the protection of arisen afflicting feelings and for the benefit of good health. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not use the requisites thus, there is no taint, vexation, or fever in one who uses them thus. This is called the taints that should be abandoned by using. Taints to be abandoned by enduring. What taints, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by enduring? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, bears cold and heat, hunger and thirst, in contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and creeping things. He endures ill-spoken, unwelcome words, and arisen bodily feelings that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing, and menacing to life. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not endure such things, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who endures them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by enduring. Taints to be abandoned by avoiding. What taints, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by avoiding? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, avoids a wild elephant, a wild horse, a wild bull, a wild dog, a snake, a stump, a bramble patch, a chasm, a cliff, a cesspit, a sewer. Reflecting wisely, he avoids sitting on unsuitable seats, wandering to unsuitable resorts, and association with bad friends, since if he were to do so, wise companions in the holy life might suspect him of evil conduct. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not avoid these things, there are no taints, vexation, and fever in one who avoids them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. Taints to be abandoned by removing. What bhikkhu should be abandoned by removing? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, does not tolerate an arisen thought of sensual desire. He abandons it, removes it, does away with it, and annihilates it. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of ill will. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of cruelty. He does not tolerate arisen evil, unwholesome states. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, and annihilates them. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not remove these thoughts, there are no taints, vexation, and fever for one who removes them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by removing. Okay, so this is the another one that can remove them directly. What taints, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by developing? Here, a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor. Well, it is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the investigation of states enlightenment factor, the energy enlightenment factor, the rapture enlightenment factor, the tranquility enlightenment factor, the concentration enlightenment factor, the equanimity enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not develop these enlightenment factors, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who develops them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by developing. Bhikkhus. When for a bhikkhu the taints that should be abandoned by seeing have been abandoned by seeing, when the taints that should be abandoned by restraining have been abandoned by restraining, when the taints that should be abandoned by using have been abandoned by using, then the taints that should be abandoned by enduring have been abandoned by enduring, when the taints that should be abandoned by avoiding have been abandoned by avoiding, then when the taints that should be abandoned by removing have been abandoned by removing, when the taints that should be abandoned by developing have been abandoned by developing, then he is called a bhikkhu who dwells restrained with the restraints of all the taints. He has severed craving, flung off the fetters, and with the complete penetration of conceit, he has made an end of suffering. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Any questions on that? Okay, so I thought I'd just kind of change the subject a little bit. I had one sutta here that I really liked in the Samyutta Nikaya. There were a few that sort of don't really fit into kind of some of the modes that I was trying to bring out. But this one is, again, 46, Bhojanka Samyutta, number 4, the clothes. On one occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was dwelling at Sapati in Jeta's Grove and not Pindaka's Park. There, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Friends, bhikkhus." "Friends," they replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this, "Friends, there are 7 factors of enlightenment." "What 7? Goes through all the different ones, ending with equanimity. "These are the 7 factors of enlightenment. Whichever of these 7 factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in during the morning, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the morning. Whichever I want to dwell in during the middle of the day, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the middle of the day. Whichever I want to dwell in during the evening, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the evening. If, friends, it occurs to me, let it be the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, it occurs to me, it's measureless. It occurs to me, it's fully perfected. While it persists, I understand it persists. If it abates in me, I understand it is abated in me for a particular reason. If, friends, it occurs to me, let it be the enlightenment factor of equanimity." So he's probably gone through all 4 of those. "It is measureless. It occurs to me, it is fully perfected. While it persists, I understand it persists. But if it abates in me, I understand it has abated in me for a particular reason. Suppose, friends, a king or a royal minister had a wardrobe full of different colored clothes. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the morning, he would wear it in the morning. Whatever suit he might want to wear during the middle of the day, he would wear during the middle of the day. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the evening, he would wear in the evening. So too, friends, whichever of these seven factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in during the morning, during the middle of the day, during the evening, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the evening. If, friends, it occurs to me, let it be the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, all is above, I understand it has abated in me for a particular reason. And maybe one last one.
It's not a hideous thing, but it isn't as if it's that he just sort of floats on purple clouds of bliss that are filled with the seven lightning factors. It's there needs to be some attention and knowledge put into it.
This kind of supports that as well. This one kind of supports that. So this is sutta number 30, Udayi. On one occasion, the Blessed One is dwelling among the Sumbas, there in a town of the Sumbas called Sedaka. Then the Venerable Udayi approached the Blessed One and said to him, "It is wonderful, Venerable Sir. It is amazing, Venerable Sir. How helpful has been my devotion and reverence for the Blessed One, my sense of shame and fear of wrongdoing. For in the past, Venerable Sir, when I was still a householder, I did not have much concern for the Dhamma or the Sangha. But when I considered my devotion and reverence to the Blessed One and my sense of shame and fear of wrongdoing, I went forth from the household life into homelessness. The Blessed One taught me the Dhamma thus, such its form, such its origin, such its passing away, such as feeling, such as perception, such are volitional formations, such as consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. When, Venerable Sir, while I was staying in an empty hut, following along with the surge and decline of the five aggregates, subject to clinging, so that could mean arising and passing away of the aggregates, I directly knew as it really is, this is suffering, I directly knew as it really is, this is the origin of suffering. I directly knew as it really is. This is the cessation of suffering. I directly knew as it really is. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. I have made the breakthrough to the Dhamma, Venerable Sir, and I have obtained the path, which, when I have developed and cultivated it, will lead me on, while I am dwelling in the appropriate way, to such a state that I shall understand, destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, and what had to be done has been done. There is no more of the state of being. So he's basically at least a stream enter at this point, but he hasn't totally attained enlightenment, the arhantship. I have obtained the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which, when I have developed it and cultivated it, it will lead me on, while I am dwelling in the appropriate way, in such a state that I shall understand, destroyed is birth, there is no more for this state of being. I have obtained the enlightenment factor of equanimity, which, when I have developed and cultivated it, it will lead me on while I am dwelling in the appropriate way, to such a state that I shall understand, destroyed is birth, there is no more of this state of being. This, Venerable Sir, is the path that I have obtained, which will lead me on, to such a state that I shall understand, destroyed is birth, there is no more of this state of being. Good, good, Udayi. Indeed, Udayi, this is the path that you have obtained, and when you have developed and cultivated it, it will lead you on, while you are dwelling in the appropriate way, to such a state that you will understand. Destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, and what had to be done has been done. there is no more of this state of being for this state of being.
Is this the same Udali who is comes off the cave from the entire time chain for the moment?
I mean, I don't think there was a footnote on that.
I doubt it. He was pretty well.
I don't think there's a footnote on that. No, there's no footnote. Any other questions? You guys are making it easy for me. Okay, thanks.